So I've been thinking of this topic has two sources. Number one is this past Shabbos was the fifth anniversary of Gilad Shalit's capture. He's been captured for 5 years. So that was one thing that I noticed. And the second thing is that I think this is the largest book I've ever read cover to cover, but it was worth every page. The Prime Minister's highly recommended reading. Get a hold of this. I'm not sure I'm ready to lend it out, but it is written by Yehuda Avner. Yehuda Avner was the, talks about his 35-40 year career of working for every prime minister, Levi Eshkol, Golda Meir, Yitzhak Rabin, and then mostly Menachem Begin. Levi Eshkol was a pretty junior person, but he became their speechwriters and was the speechwriter for all these. Menachem Begin used to call him my Shakespeare. He was born in England, and he writes in English, and he eventually became the ambassador to England. Towards the end of Menachem Begin's tenure, he sent them up to England to be his. So he gives anecdotes here. It's not really like memoirs, because he's not really defending himself. He's just saying what happened. He's just a fly on the wall. And it is amazing. For me, especially, but a lot of stuff I didn't even really know about. So he tells two stories one of them I was not so surprised about. I never really heard of this whole incident. But I wasn't so surprised as what the result was. So that's the one. That's the one on the left. It didn't really come out very well, but I'll read it to you from here. So there's apparently some. You, I guess, would remember this. The shame of Shonau. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Shonau. So apparently Shonau was this place. I remember this. This is this place that when Russian Jews started getting out, so the is in the height of the Let My People Go movement, and when they started getting out, so the Russians wouldn't let them emigrate straight to Israel. That would be like a big push. They couldn't go straight to Israel, so he used to send them to this place, Shonau, which is the was in Switzerland, I think. So he said, let them go to Switzerland, and from Switzerland they'd be processed, and from there they would be able to go. They would be able to go to Israel. So apparently there was a Swiss train, a train carrying Jews from communist Russia to Israel via Vienna, had been hijacked in September by two Arab terrorists at a railway crossing. Seven Jews were taken hostage: one a 73-year-old man, a dying woman, and a 3-year-old child. So those were the seven hostages. The terrorists issued an ultimatum to the Austrian government, that wasn't Switzerland, it was Austria, to the Austrian government, saying that you better close down this place for now, or we're going to kill everybody. The Swiss government the Austrian government responded by saying, fine. Basically, they said, fine, we'll close down the place and let the people, the hijackers immediately got on a plane to Libya and end the story. So Golda Meir was the prime minister at the time. Golda Meir was mightily annoyed.
Yeah.
So first she said, I want to speak to the chancellor of Austria, Bruno Kreisky, who happened to be Jewish. Who happened to be Jewish. And on her way there, she decided to take a stopover at the Council of Europe, which apparently there were about 400 delegates that would meet this place, the Council of Europe. So Golda Meir gets up in front of everybody, and this person's writing, I wrote a very nice speech for her to say. Apparently, Golda Meir thought it was kind of silly, because the protocol is that you give out the speech to everybody. Everybody basically has a copy in front of you, and the person gets up and says it. So Golda Meir apparently thought that was kind of silly. So Golda Meir gets up and says, I apologize for not doing my announced remarks. You're all welcome to read them. They're on the pages in front of you. But this is what I really want to tell you. And she starts saying to them about this is just after the Israeli athletes were kidnapped and murdered in Munich, and that the German government released the killers in return for the hijackers, etc. And says, oh yeah, and he said, I fully understand your feelings. This is what I put on the page here. You could probably make it. I said, oh yes, I fully understand your feelings. I fully understand the feelings of the European prime minister saying, for God's sake, leave us out of this. Fight your own wars on your own turf. Why did your enmity have to do with us? Let us be. And I can even understand by some governments might even decide that the only way to rid themselves of this insidious threat is to declare their country out of bounds, if not to Jews generally, and certainly to Israeli Jews or Jews en route to Israel. It seems to me this is the moral choice which every European government has to make these days. I mean, are you going to work with Israel and risk hijackers, or are you going to say, forget it, we're out of it, we don't want to deal with this anymore? And then in a voice hard and ruthlessly, she thundered, European governments have no alternative but to decide what they're going to do. To each one that upholds the rule of law, I suggest that there is but only one answer. No deals with terrorists, no truck with terrorism.
Same idea.
Okay. So any government which strikes a deal with these killers does so at its own peril. What happened in Vienna is that a democratic government, a European government, came to an agreement with terrorists. In so doing, it has brought shame upon itself. In so doing, it has breached a basic principle of rule of law, the basic principle of freedom of the movement of peoples, or should I just say the basic freedom of the movement of the Jews fleeing Russia. Oh, what a victory for terrorism this is. And that was, and everybody applauded. She went out to see the Austrian Chancellor. The Austrian Chancellor wouldn't give in. It has a description of their whole conversation here. Basically, Golda Meir left in the middle when this government got lost. And 5 hours later, she gets back to Israel. She told the waiting Israeli press at Ben Gurion Airport, I think the best way of summing up the nature of my meeting with Chancellor Kreisky is to say this. He didn't even offer me a glass of water. That's story A, which we're used to hearing, right? We're used to this refrain of don't deal with terrorists, right? That's something that we understand. So that only made the second story very surprising to me. So it's on page 309, and this is in the midst of the Entebbe, the fight to Entebbe. And Yitzhak Rabin was prime minister at the time. And what did I put here? So he writes about this cabinet meeting that's on the right side of the page, where it says there was a silent pause. Are any of these plans operational? Meaning he talked to the general. Can you recommend any of them to the government? No. So in that case, said Rabin with alacrity, since the terrorist ultimatum is scheduled to run out at 2 p.m. tomorrow, I intend to propose to the full cabinet that we negotiate with the hijackers for the release of the hostages. We'll negotiate through the French. If we are unable to rescue them by force, we have no moral right to abandon them. We must exchange them for terrorists held here in our jails in Israel. Our negotiations will be in earnest, not a tactical ruse to gain time, and we will keep our side of any deal we strike. So I object, countered Perez, and this is probably, I never knew about that Perez and Rabin were added to it. So I object, countered Perez. I'm sure you do, muttered Rabin. but this time Perez was not to be silenced. We have never agreed in the past to free prisoners who have murdered innocent civilians. If we give in to the hijackers' demands and release terrorists, everyone will understand us, but no one will respect us. If, on the other hand, we conduct a military operation to free the hostages, it is possible that no one will understand us, but everyone will respect us, depending, of course, on the outcome of the operation. So Rabin yells at him, basically, and says, how could you do this? He discusses here this own private conversation that Yehuda Avner, the author, had with Rabin. Rabin basically telling him, I made this decision a long time ago that if I ever came to this, I was going to deal with the hostages rather than have people die. And it also describes here his conversation with Menachem Begin when he got, Menachem Begin at that time was the leader of the opposition. He got up in Knesset and announced his intentions. And Menachem Begin, wasn't the entire Knesset, it was the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Securities Committee. Menachem Begin got up and said, I want to talk to my people first. Menachem Begin walks out, he comes back in and says, we stand with the government on this. So even Menachem Begin was ready to say, okay, deal with the terrorists in order to release the hostages. So that was very surprising to me. That was not what we're used to hearing. But here, it's black and white that was the Israeli policy at that time.
They've been releasing terrorists for years to get back hostages, or at least soldiers.
Or to try, or to get... Right, well, now it's a little bit...
I usually release way too many.
Right.
These were like 21 exchanges, or 100 for one, or whatever.
They have done it.
Right. So what happened to, meaning officially, I think Israel might still have that policy of not negotiating with terrorists. That's at least what you hear. But growing up, that's all I ever heard. You know, but it seems like it's not exactly held to in the way. So anyways, there are significant sources on the topic. which we'll try to go through, although we don't have that much time to go through all of them. This whole story starts with a Mishnah in Gittin. There's a Mishnah in Gittin that says, "Ein poden es hashvuyin yeser al kadei demehem." You're not allowed to be podesh shvuyin. You're not allowed to redeem captives more than how much they're worth. So why? Miftei tikkun ha'olam. Because in order for the betterment of the world. So what does it mean for the betterment of the world? So the Gemara starts off by saying, three lines down, Yibaylehu ha'ay mifnei tikkun olam mishum duchka de tziburuhu, odilma mishum... Odilma mishum duchka de tziburuhu, odilma mishum delo legarbo v'laisi tfei. So is it because it's going to be very expensive for the tzibur, or is it because we're concerned that they're going to go and take more? So Tashma, so we have an example, the Levi Bar Darga, Parka Labarse, Betlesar Alfe Din Reza. We know that this fellow, Levi Bar Darga, ransomed his own son for 13,000. So that should be what? That sounds like it's going like the first opinion, right? There's two possibilities. One is that it's either a burden on the tzibur, or two of us, we don't want to encourage them to capture more. So if you're going to say that it's the first opinion, right? If you're going to say that somebody went ahead and did it for their own child, right? So that erases the first answer, right? That means that it's not a burden to the tzibur anymore. It's only for that person. Now, it also might not be encouraging them to take more. Right? I mean, you have to get the right family if you're going to do whatever. But that seems to be what the Gemara is trying to say. You see, this is a proof that Levi Bar Darga went ahead and did it. So Abaye says, "Uman, who's this Levi Bar Darga person? I don't know who he is. Uman Leimel and the Baratzon Chachamah. But who says that he was right? Dilma Shalom Baratzon Chachamah. It could be that he was wrong." End of sugya. The sugya ends. The topic ends right there. So you're kind of left. Are there any exceptions to this rule? So there are other Gemaras that indicate exceptions to the rule. There's one Ksuvis, which you're not going to do, and there's a Gemara later on, Gittin, 13 blot later, in the midst of the Tisha B'Av Sugyas, that discusses a story that happened. So there you go. Tana Rabbana, Maisav Rebbe Yeshua ben Chananya, Shehalach L'Krach Gedolei Sheberomi, that he went out to the big city in Rome. So Amrulo Tinok Echad Yesh Beveis Eisurim. They told him, you know, there's this one child that's sitting in prison. Yafei Nai V'Tov Roy V'Kavutzo Sav Seduros Lo Taltalim. He's got beautiful eyes and he looks very nice and he's got these hair that's in curls. So Halof Amar Al Petach Beis Eisurim. So he went and stood by the opening to the prison and he yelled out, right? Mi Nasan the Meshisa Yaakov Yisrael Levozim. He quotes this pasuk in Yeshayahu that says, "Who will give to the Meshisa Yaakov?"
Desolate state.
Right. Who has caused desolation to Yaakov and Yisrael? So Ana Oso Tinuk V'Amar. He continues the pasuk. The chap is that this is the continuation of the pasuk. Halo Hashem Zuchatanu Zu V'Lo Avu B'Drachav Halo V'Lo Sham B'Torah. So that must be Hashem because we've sinned and we didn't go in His way and we didn't listen to His Torah. So Amar. So he responds by saying Muftachni Bo Shemorah Rabbi Yisrael. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, upon hearing this kid just respond with the second half of the pasuk, said, "Oh, this must be, this kid's going to one day be the Gadol Hador. He's going to be a big Talmid Chacham one day." Ha'avoda she'eni zaz mikan ashev denu b'chol mamun she'poskin alav. He says, "I swear." Ha'avoda means I swear by the avoda, by the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. I'm not going to leave here until we redeem this kid. So Amru and it said about lo zaz misham ashev padu b'mamun harbe until they gave him a lot of money. B'la yu yamu mu'atim achahora ho'rabi Yisrael. It was only a small amount of time before he started paskening shailas. Umanu and he was he Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. He's in the Avram Fried song, right? In the Shmuel ben Elisha, Machnis Nichla. Is that him? All right, gotta check. Okay.
So basically, this is not a person who's done a crime.
No.
They're sitting in prison.
Well, he was Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah, he's sitting in prison for redemption. He's essentially been kidnapped.
Right. That seems to be what we're talking about. We're talking about people that were kidnapped. So Tosos here raises the question, says, what's going on here? The Gemara again says you're not allowed to pay too much, and yet this kid's the Gemara explicitly says that he's being overly paid for, right? Why is this the exception to the rule? The Gemara wants to know. So Tosos wants to know. So Tosos gives there's two Tosos in that both ask the question. On each Gemara has its own Tosos to ask the question, but they give different answers. Right, number one is the one on the bottom here, Adaf Mem Hei, right, it says in Gemara Ksuvis that I Nishbis, this is another case, that Nishbis I Vakshmi Men Adasar V'dameha, that they demanded for this girl 10 times her amount. Hamrishon Podish Ani Isha, it says you're allowed to redeem her. One time you're allowed to redeem her. Shani Isha Dahavi Kagufa Yosem Rebito, because she's like you. It's like redeeming yourself. The Achavel Asma Lutiknu Shlo Yitin Kol Asher Lo Biad Nafsho Rabbi Shuvan Chananya Deprake Lahu Chinan B'Mamun Harbe B'Hanazikun Lefi Shaya Muflog B'Chachma. And this kid, why did this kid get out? This kid got to go out because he was a genius. Because he was there's a specific reason to redeem him. Right. So reason A, if you're redeeming yourself or your wife, or two is if there's a specific, this kid is special. Inami B'Shas Churban Habayis Lo Shaya. Is that Orv is the time of Churban Beis Hamikdash? What do you mean? You're gonna keep the Romans from capturing more? The Romans are capturing people all over the place, right? So by just redeeming one, it's not gonna cause more or less to be redeemed anyway. So there's three exceptions that are given in this Tosos as possibilities. Number one, if it's your wife. Number two, if it's a muflug, it's somebody who's extremely special. Or number three, if it's not likely they're gonna capture anyone else anyways. Source number four has another answer. Tosos, he says, Ki ika sakanas nefashos poden shvuyin yoser al kadei demehem. So Tosos here says that if the person is in danger, you could be poed to them for more than they're worth. I mean, why were they the regular? What was the case of the first case that we're given talking about? And so I wasn't talking about, like, we're used to hostages with a gun to the head. No, they just captured people for money. That's what people did. It was a way of earning a living. You know, they used to go and capture people, ransom them, and great, you know, we'll take money for them. If you kill them, they're not worth very much money. So they weren't really in danger, right? We're saying this isn't a very good practice that we want to keep going, so we're not going to encourage it. So they made rules, basically monitoring the trade of these captives, you know, whatever. But it wasn't a Sakanas Nefashos issue. Here, this child, Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, was a danger issue, so that's why he was permitted. He repeats the other reason is because he was very special. So how do we paskin, right? So four reasons were given, right? If it's you, if it's a kid special, number three, if it's a time when everyone's being captured, or number four, that it's dangerous. So how do we paskin? So Shulchan Aruch paskins, Ein poden hashvuyin yosim yitei demeyim, that you're not allowed to spend more money because of tikkun olam. Why? Shla yuha oivim moshim atzma lein lishvosam, so that the oivim, so that the enemies won't keep trying to capture people. Aval adam yachol liftos es atzma b'chom asher, so a person wants to spend his own money, so that he's totally permitted to do. V'chein l'tamar chacham, similarly for a special tamar chacham. V'afilu eino tamar chacham, el shu tamar char pe'efshar shi'i adam gadol. Or even if he's not yet a tamar chacham, but he has the potential of becoming a tamar chacham. Podemos of Adamim Berubim, he's allowed to spend a lot of money on that person also. And then the Ramah comments here also, v'im ishto ka'achar dami olo, see in the Torah. Does his wife count as him or not count as him? So that's the discussion later on. So the main exception, the two main exceptions that Shulchan Aruch quotes is the A, yourself, B, a Talmud Chacham. It leaves out the idea of dangerous and leaves out the idea if it's a time of everybody being captured. So does it mean that we don't paskin like it? It doesn't necessarily mean we don't paskin like it. It just means the Shulchan Aruch didn't include that amongst the exceptions. There are those that quote those other reasons as well.
Have they ever given any kind of ransom for Gilad
Shalit? There was a deal that just fell through today. Yesterday.
They were negotiating,
and Israel said we accept this deal.
They never asked for anything.
I don't know whether they're. Yeah, I haven't been following it that closely.
They never said that we want 3,000 people released for him.
No, you're sure? Really? No, they've never given a number.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It's always been that Israel's been willing to deal and has gotten close. I think this is the third or fourth time that they've actually
gotten
so close that it's like we're ready, and then the captors every night.
Hamas, forget it. Right.
I don't know that Hamas has him. Does Hamas have him or somebody else? Somebody over there has it.
Great. So, so there is a famous. One cannot go through this topic without recalling the famous Yamshel Shlomo about the story of the Maharam Ruthenberg. The Maharam Ruthenberg was taken captive. So we may recall this from the Scholar in Residence weekend. Back in the day we discussed this. Maharam Ruthenberg was taken captive. And this is, the Yamshel Shlomo's rendition of the story, which became the famous version of the story. It's not exactly how it, historically, it's not exactly how it played out. But halakhically, when you're dealing with the halakha, it doesn't necessarily matter what historically happened. It matters what the post-lake thought happened, because that's what he's passing on his perception of the facts, not necessarily what the facts are. So the Maharam Ruthenberg says, was captured for many years. And they had a big ransom for him, and the community wanted to be poda him, and he wouldn't allow it, because he said that you're not allowed to spend more money than the person's worth. And he says, I don't understand. He's a big Talmud Chacham. Why would he? Well, he should be under the Talmud Chacham exemption clause, and there's nobody like him, and he should be able to spend as much money as you want on it. Right, and even if he didn't think that he was so great or whatever, the Bittul Torah that's involved, etc. So why is it? If you go, I guess, four lines from the bottom, uvadai daitohai, certainly what his thoughts must have been was, sheim yiftu oso, im kein yesh lamecha shelo yasu kein kol asarim l'tamad chacham ha-muflik shebedor. It must be that he'd be putting all the rest of the Talmidei Chachamim in danger because of the large amount of money they'd be able to ransom him for. Right? So they'd go and get somebody else. Ashel yaspik mamon ha-gadol l'fdosim, until there wouldn't be enough money to be posed to them. V'tishtake ha-tor mi-Yisrael, and Torah will be forgotten. So ki gam shem that I've heard that they also wanted to take the Rush's Talmud, and he told them, and you should run away, and he ran away to Toledo, right? And he was saved, and etc. And therefore, mutav shetavid me'at chach mater b'Yisrael mimach shetavid chach mater yikar. And he said, because it's better that they lose me rather than lose everybody. So he's saying that yes, it's true that there is a clause that you could save Talmid Chachamim, but that's only because the Talmid Chachamim is unique, and they probably won't get another Talmid Chachamim. If they realize, oh, there's a lot of money in these Talmid Chachamim, so then they will go and capture a lot of them, and then they will all be in danger, and that's why the Maharam Ruthenberg refused to be saved. Historically, the Rush didn't leave Germany until several years after the Maharam died. So he probably wasn't in danger of being captured. The Maharam actually wasn't just captured and held for ransom. He was quote-unquote accused of a crime. He tried exiting the country without proper papers. It was turned in by an apostate Jew. There's a whole story about what was going on there. It wasn't so simple that the Rush would have been captured. That part of the Maharam isn't so certain. But it certainly was, it is true that he refused to be redeemed. Fine. So number one, Maharam, you see, standing up and saying, I don't want to be captured if other people are going to be captured, if other people might be in trouble. So there is another, on the right side of the page here, is a passage from Sefer Bikvatson. Bikvatson is Sefer by Reb Schachter. This is the beginning of his article about the status of Eretz Yisrael of Zman Hazeh. So he tells the story. Some of you may remember the story. However, it was at the previous Gesserman wedding. I always at these weddings I find like one friend of mine. So there's one friend of mine that was there from Yeshiva, and he asked me about this story. He says, "Do you know if this story is actually true? Have you ever seen anyone else quote the story in this way?" And it's about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and in fact, he asked Rav Shmuel didn't really know about this story. It certainly was involved. Parts of it are true, but the punchline might not necessarily be true, but regardless, it's important. So at the end of the summer of Tavshin Lamed, which was, 1970, I think, Gamkin Haisim Dinas Yisrael B'Matzav Shel Shalom. B'nai Yisrael was at a time of peace. Now, 1970 wasn't exactly a time of peace. Right? The 67 war had ended 3 years earlier, and the Yom Kippur was going to be 3 years later. It wasn't exactly a time of peace, but whatever. It was a period of bein milchama lemilchama, right? It was between wars. V'tafsu terroristim arabim shnei abironim meleim yehudim tairim b'chazara samaritz Yisrael America v'lichim liyardin, right? They took two planes and brought them to Jordan. V'yumayim la'arugas kulam. They said, we're going to kill all of them. And among those captors was Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. Who remembers this? Anybody even know about this?
No, it was on a plane, but I always thought it was the
intended
one.
No. It's this one, right? So it wasn't brought
to...
Right.
This one was about to hijack
one. Right, it's a hijack plane they were taking to Jordan. So Rosh Hashim Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. Ba'olah azalev chaver mitamidev ha'ashim lahagish kama milyoni dalin lemasher chutz shal arzo sabris she'agishu im hon ze la'arabim ha'tarisim ha'menashe yichu ez rabim ha'refutner v'donu azarabanim medin ha'mishna ha'dein polim ez ha'shvun yes ha'kdei demayhem. But the Gemara says the little garb of le'si tfei l'fiyatam ze ha'filu yirso ha'kalasiz me'asim ye'asir, that basically they wanted to collect a lot of millions of dollars just to save Refutner. And they couldn't. And what about this Mishnah that says you're not allowed to save? You're not allowed to spend. The community is not allowed to spend that much money. He says which we've quoted, the little garbo, the b'shavi hamuflik b'chachma, you're allowed to capture b'yosim if they damav, and they brought the Shulchan Aruch Yerodei Rishon Beis where it says that, right? That perhaps for a Futner would be able to spend the exceedingly large amount of money in order to save him because he gets this the Maram exemption clause, or not the Maram exemption clause, he gets the Tamil Chacham exemption clause. So v'hayu min harabanim ash hayusurim lomar sh'af Refutner qualified for this. V'asher alkein yishlef doso afil b'yosim yichdei damav. V'tan az kenegdam agon Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky argued against them. De'ein ha'cheshbon hazet sodei klal. That this isn't correct cheshbon. V'chol ha'chdina d'pidyon shvuyim leisa el b'shas shalom. That this, all of these halachos of pidyon shvuyim are only during a time of peace. However, during a time of war, about b'shas milchama, yiv shalomer shemilchuyim lahafzik mililchom almanas liftos es hashvuyim b'mamon, sharei alidekin nimtsinu misaimim lahaoyiv b'emtza milchama. He says, but if it's a time of war, you're not allowed to judge. You can't negotiate with them during a time of war, right? Then you're going to negotiate over everybody. There's never going to be a war then. It's going to be impossible to ever have any war. Kadei matan haksafim hagdom lahaoyiv halo yochlu lachazik od yoser es matzva b'milchama. You're going to be supporting the enemy, right? And that you can't go ahead and do. He bases this on a Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch says that there are three mitzvahs that you have to give up your life for, right? And then, but there's also mitzvahs where the idea of a chayben doesn't really apply. The Minchas Chinuch says an example of that is going out to war, right? If you're going out to war, so obviously, right? We're going out to war until it becomes dangerous. Well, it doesn't exactly work that way, right? If we have a mitzvah of milchama. So then you have to go out. What time is it?
Are we doing that?
8:14. So how does this? So Retractor, by the way, takes this and goes on to say that so you see that Bnei Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael is constantly in a state of war, and the regular halacha talks about giving back land and things like that. Right, the regular laws that we have about circumstances etc. don't really apply to Eretz Yisrael b'sman hazeh. Now the thing that we're not sure about is this, that we haven't this statement of Rav Yaakov that it's all a period of milchama, so that we haven't been able to track down the exact source of that. But regardless, what?
They weren't in Israel. They were
no, but it was an Israel issue. This happened to be in Jordan, but you'd be supporting the enemies, right? This was certainly at a time when Jordan was an enemy, wherever these Arabs were, whoever was attacking was certainly the enemy. So this idea of this milchama issue certainly factors into any type of deal that would ever be taking place for Shvuyim. The last part here, we don't really have time to go through it in full, is the question of, well, okay, meaning most of this discussion, the Mishnah of Pidyon Shvuyim, right? What is that discussing giving up in exchange for the captive?
Money,
right? It's talking about that it's going to be a big tircha for the tzibur if we give up this money. But however, the discussion does manaze isn't really for money anymore. Rather, it's for their prisoners. It's for terrorists. It's for murderers. It's for those types of people. So, do the same halachos apply? Right? What really is the issue then with giving up? Right? With giving up? With paying the ransom? Right? It's not really a tirchid in tzibur, if anything. Now Eretz Yisrael can stop paying for all these people to be residing in prison, right? So is it really what really is keeping us from giving it, or is there anything keeping us from giving into those demands? What's really the counterweight to giving into demands to giving up these terrorists? So
future terrorists have to get rid of them.
It's the risk.
Right. So the answer is the risk, right? That's the question. Are we allowed to risk in exchange for saving these people?
I mean, that's the same strategy that they're using for Guantanamo prisoners also.
That's dangerous to let them out.
Yeah.
Right. So that's actually a very different question than this question of balancing out the cost of the tzibur, etc. Also, and that's a question of, well, are you allowed to put yourself at risk in order to save the life of somebody, right? This doesn't exactly fall so neatly into the sugya of the categories of pidyon shvuyim like we've been discussing. Right? This is an issue of a military issue, right? Is the military allowed to put itself at risk in order to save the life of one person? You want
to
say something?
I was going to say, I think then we have to go back and look at the pasuk, the specific pasuk on which pidyon shvuyim is based, right? You're saying, you know, the source is in Git.
Right.
We actually have to go back to.
Well, the source for not giving it, the source in the Torah is if somebody's captured, you got to redeem them. Okay. The Gemara in Gittin is, well, you can't pay too much because that's dangerous. Right? So the question then becomes, probably, because the more relevant question is, perhaps, isn't even that discussion.